Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
We got a lot of Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL action all underway. The RBC Heritage, I believe. All of that headed your direction. But I teased it as we went to break to finish off the first hour. It is time for the Animal Thunderdome.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I had a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Man, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
There you have it. The music, the tones, the melodrama, all of it. And I'm going to start it off because we had a little bit of Animal Thunderdome in my backyard. We think, so I talked about this on Thursday's show, I believe, that we were throwing baseball in the backyard, my 10-year-old and I, and we have like some tall trees, and the ball went into the trees, and my 10-year-old went in there, and he came running back out, and he said, "Dad, there's a rabbit without its head back here," which doesn't happen a lot. It's not like we live in a neighborhood where there's a lot of wildlife around, right? Like we're in a normal, I would say, house neighborhood. There's a lot of rabbits. I've never seen a decapitated rabbit before. And so I've been trying to figure out what it is. And my wife went and looked at the rabbit and she said, "Oh, there are a lot of foxes now that have come into the neighborhood and will run around at night," because we're not that far from the woods. And we think that maybe it was a fox that caught one of the rabbits. I mean, this rabbit is totally decapitated. I know I said I was going to send a picture. I forgot to do it. How would you guys assess that, that is likely to have happened? The only other option is maybe a cat or a dog, but it feels like it felt like a more of a predatorial move.
Yeah, as soon as you mentioned this on yesterday's show, Brian Grubb tweeted us and he said, "Only tiger cats that don't use litter boxes eat rabbit heads."
Yeah. Well, our cats are pansies. They don't go outside. So our two tiger cats, the Bengal cats that we have, they don't go outside. So they're not responsible for it. Guess is it's probably a tiger. That would be amazing. I think it's probably a fox.
Well, OG Pity the Fool also tweeted in after that and he said, "We got to rule out the Bengal cats. He thinks human did it." But Deb Carson, the award-winning update anchor who takes the desk after Eddie for the DP show, she came in yesterday and she was like, "You know, that headless rabbit Clay was talking about, that has to be an owl."
Oh.
Yes. You talked about how your yard is fenced in. So I went to the internet, which is never wrong, and I wrote in rabbit with no head in backyard. It says, "Headless rabbits have been found around schools, and wildlife experts say it's likely the work of an owl or a red-tailed hawk. They can't carry, they cannot carry a whole rabbit, so they just take the head away to eat the eyes and brain."
Oh. I mean, that is Animal Thunderdome indeed. I mean, if it was a hawk or an owl, that would have been kind of scary to see, right? Like that thing just go in, rip off that rabbit head and take off.
Gangster.
I mean, I would not have anticipated that. Now, when I say my yard is fenced in, we have a gate in the back that opens up to allow the cars to come in. We park our car in the garage, which is on the back side of the house. So, I mean, like, there is a little place underneath the gate where, like, a fox could have come in. But, in other words, it's not completely fenced in to keep any animal out, but it would have to be a small animal to be able to fit under the gate that opens to allow the cars in. But
I
the owl
the
or the
carried,
hawk.
Yeah, the fox would. Yeah, that makes sense because I think the fox would have carried the whole bunny away.
Yeah, I think that does make sense. Deb Carson with a big time play there. I think she's right. I think she nailed it. All right, we've got you have got a bevy of Animal Thunderdome stories for us.
I do. Let's start with your favorite, snakes.
Nah. I'm a snakeist, snake for people who don't know. That the only thing that I am 100% biased against without apology for in the entirety of my life is I hate snakes. I'm a snakeist. I'll just own it. I own it. I don't like them. I hate them.
Have you ever been to the San Diego Zoo?
I have been to the San Diego Zoo. Several years ago. Remember that story I told you about? Because I hadn't spent a lot of time in California before. And I went out to San Diego. It's probably been about 7 or 8 years ago. It was before. It was longer than that. Because my wife was pregnant with our second kid. So it was about a decade ago. And we were staying in downtown San Diego. Fabulous city. And they had the when they had the big earthquake. Do you remember, like, they had that? It's probably been a decade ago. It's probably the biggest earthquake that's hit in the San Diego area. And we were, and I'd never been in an earthquake before. We were on like the 13th floor of a downtown hotel, and the room was swaying like crazy. It was a result of the earthquake.
And then you brought two earthquakes to L.A. with you.
That's right. Both of the two biggest earthquakes. I've been in three different California earthquakes, probably the three biggest really to hit in California. I've been not only in them, I've always been in a high-rise building in my hotel when the earthquakes hit.
That's God trying to tell us something.
Yeah.
The San Diego Zoo this past Monday, they made headlines because a zoo employee was bit by a venomous snake.
Oh, no.
Yeah, now this incident happened while he was caring for the reptile in a non-public area. Their statement says, although the San Diego Zoo cares for a number of venomous reptiles, incidents like this are very rare, and the snake was contained at all times with no risk of an escape, the zoo said in a statement to the USA Today. So this snake, an African bush viper.
How serious is the poison there? I don't know.
Dude, here's the worst part. There is no anti-venom for this snake. It causes an immediate fever, hemorrhaging, blood clots, and likely death in humans, according to the University of Michigan. However, patients can be treated for their bite using antivenom created for other snakes' venom. It's not guaranteed, though, that it will work. They're not telling us anything about this guy's condition. I scoured the internet yesterday. There's still no update on his condition.
I mean, theoretically, he has to be in a San Diego area hospital, right?
Right, but no update from any news outlet.
So he could still end up dying. I mean, that probably means that they're keeping it quiet while they try to. I mean, I can't even imagine. First of all, I would not handle in any way any snake that was venomous, right? Like, even if they have the perfect anti-venom, there's no way I would even get close to it. What is the purpose? I mean this honestly. Why does the San Diego Zoo need this snake? Like, do you think there's anybody that has ever gone to this? What's the snake called?
African bush viper.
All right. Has anyone ever gone to the San Diego Zoo and specifically asked to see an African bush sniper, puffer, whatever it is, snake? I bet it's never occurred. In other words, I don't know what they gain by bringing this snake all the way from Africa to have it on display. If there's not an anti-venom for the snake, my zoo wouldn't have that kind of snake.
Yeah, and by the way, if any news breaks about this guy's condition and you see it online, definitely tweet at us. Right into another snake story for you.
It's too many snake stories.
Australia. This one's going to make you. A grocery store chain says it's investigating after a customer found a venomous snake inside the plastic bag with her prepackaged lettuce.
You know, I saw this and I was like, this is unbelievable. Yeah, and it's not just there's been a lot of stories. You probably saw the story about the shrimp tails that some guy said he found in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch, which went viral on the internet.
Yeah.
And now, like this, I'm just not a fan. I am not a fan of the idea that this could happen.
Yeah, Leslie Kuhn of Mossman, she posted photos of this to a Facebook group, Mossman Living, showing the pale-headed snake that her son found inside the package of lettuce that they bought from Aldi. She says, check packaged lettuce carefully, Australia residents. And the chain store says, we've worked with customers and the team to identify the snake's natural habitat, which is certainly not an Aldi store.
Right? Yes.
They're still determining how the snake got to be inside the lettuce package. They say, we're working closely with our produce supplier to investigate how this happened. We've never seen anything like it. We assume, and it's only an assumption, that because it was a small baby snake, it was picked with the lettuce and it survived the whole process.
I mean, I want to go to Australia. I know everybody's got the list. I know Eddie went to Australia for what, like 2 weeks for his 50th birthday a couple of years ago. And I would love to go to Australia at some point in time. But the number of venomous snakes in Australia is terrifying to me. And I feel like I would end up getting bitten by one of these snakes when I was in Australia. I already feel like I'm going to die because I get attacked by some sort of animal because of the Animal Thunderdome in general. But this is this is not helping me to feel any confidence whatsoever.
Yeah, and I got to tweet out a picture of this snake in the bag. I mean, you could tell it's a poisonous snake, and it looks like you would have opened up the top of the lettuce bag, and then you would have been dead.
This is why I don't eat lettuce, by the way. I've not lost at all. I don't do salads. I don't do lettuce. I'm just out.
That's a good one for trying to go with the dad bod. All right, finally, let's close out the week, this week's Animal Thunderdome, with the worst dog in America. This dog has made international noise the past couple of days as he was described as a Chucky doll in a dog's body. The legendary Jeannie Most has the story.
When you're trying to get someone to adopt a dog,
Prancy. Hello, Prancy.
You usually don't use phrases like neurotic, man-hating, animal-hating, children-hating, a 13-pound rage machine, a Chucky doll in a dog's body. Is that any way to get nibbles from would-be adopters? Tiffany Fortuna is passionate about rescuing pets until a permanent home can be found. She says with a Chihuahua named Prancer, she tried to make him sound palatable. The problem is, he's just not. Ladies, if you have a husband, Tiffany says, don't bother applying unless you hate him. He bonds with women only. New Jersey-based Second Chance Pet Adoption League specializes in hard-to-place animals. They even made a movie trailer dedicated to Prancer. Tiffany wrote, "Every day we live in the grips of the demonic Chihuahua hellscape he has created."
What are you doing?
But instead of scaring folks off, Prancer is getting hundreds of inquiries. He sounds perfect for me. When can I pick up?
See, so this is how we meet new people and make friends.
Who needs friends? Tiffany has had gnarly rescues before. She decided to keep Rumpelstiltskin with his table-worthy long legs. Tiffany says she rescued him from an owner who died, and Rumpelstiltskin survived by eating a bit of his human. Prancer does have good points, extremely loyal, understands basic commands.
Prancer.
And also, he's only 2 years old and will probably live to be 21 through pure spite.
Friends.
But is he a demon dog or a...
Good boy.
What kind of devil dog lets you pet him and when you stop, noses you for more?
I first of all, we have cats. I'd be fine having a dog at some point. But this is a phenomenal story. This woman, Jeannie Most, Moost, or however you say, she's been doing fantastic stories for a long time. She has a perfect voice. She seems to find the most zany, irreverent stories anywhere. I love this, and I love this dog idea.
It's crazy. I mean, I saw this on TV, and I bookmarked it for the Thunderdome.
Yep.
I mean, you have to, whenever somebody is advertising, that they need to find a new home for a pet, it's kind of like selling a car. Usually they just talk about the good thing. And the backstory, by the way, this dog was raised by an elderly woman who treated him like a human and never socialized him. So that's why the dog was kind of a mess once it got to, you know, another family trying to adopt him out. You would think, though, that people hearing this about how he hates men more than women do and isn't a fan of other pets or young children, he's a Chucky doll and everything that we just heard there, but they've gotten hundreds of inquiries with people wanting to adopt this guy, I guess just because he's famous now.
This is awesome. This is a great story. All right, for anybody out there listening who wants to send Animal Thunderdome stories, how do they send them to you to make sure we don't miss any of them?
Hashtag Animal Thunderdome, and you could tweet us at Danny G Radio and at Clay Travis on Twitter.
There you go. So Danny G will be on the case, and the worse the story is, the more likely he is to see it. I hope, by the way, that San Diego Zoo employee ends up okay. All right. When we come back, we are scheduled to be joined by Todd Furman, It's an interesting story out there about the NFL draft as we now are 13 days away from the NFL draft. I talked about how Mac Jones had become the gambling favorite to be the San Francisco 49er pick. Well, now it started to swing back, and now Justin Fields may have become the gambling favorite. We will talk to Todd Furman about that. Does anybody actually know what's going on? We will discuss.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Bring in now my Fox Bet Live co-host, Todd Furman, at Todd Furman on Twitter. Appreciate you getting up early with us out in Vegas. What's the latest on the pool construction as we get closer to summer?
We're inching closer. We've gone back and forth trying to identify pool surrounds, waterline tiles, and all that stuff. But you'll be happy to know that we are theoretically on target to complete at least the pool portion of the backyard by Memorial Day weekend. And hopefully that means I can fire up the fire bowls that I'm having installed, a little gas line. So we'll try and send out some video when this thing is ultimately done, if it doesn't become the death of me.
You know, I will say one thing about outdoor living. You know, I think a lot of people, because of the pandemic, decided to, you know, build fire pits. There's a lot of swimming pools that have been built, basketball goals, you know, things that basically allow there to be more entertainment options around the house. I know a lot of people are moving and they've been looking for that in their lifestyle. There's something really fun about being outside and the weather being decent and just being able to have a beer, right? Like whether you're on a patio, whether you're in an outdoor area. I would imagine with those fire pits and with that pool, like, that's not a bad way to finish off the weekend, get home Friday and just be able to kick the feet up and have a drink.
No, not at all. I mean, you get out there with a nice cigar or something along those lines, especially after you felt confined to your home last summer and everything else. I think last year, and I'm, 39 years old, older than I want to be, last year was the first summer I'd ever gone through without spending a day at the pool because there was nowhere to go. So my running joke was that if this was a year removed for the pandemic and I at least had my yard set up, I would have had the sickest tan ever and might have been able to go toe-to-toe with you after your beach-style living.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to get down to get my tan on and get ready for the summer. And, you know, my kids get out of school early here, May 21st. And so my hope is I got to figure out exactly how the Little League baseball schedule is going to go, which is like 90% of my social life right now.
What do we do? They play 162 games every day in Little League baseball practice.
This Little League baseball season is just kicking my ass. I'm an assistant coach, but I've got my six-year-old's Little League games. I mean, I'm not kidding. We had games on Tuesday, Wednesday. I got off Thursday, and I get off tonight. And then we've got games Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday again. It's like, I don't even know what's going on. I mean, they're playing basically 162. I think my kids are going to be asking for load management here soon. You know, the toughest thing about the Little League management, we have to keep track of all these kids' pitch counts, right? Like, that's become a big part of Little League baseball. We didn't do that when I played, right? Like, you might have a kid like, okay, this kid pitches Tuesday and then the other kid's going to pitch Saturday. You know, you didn't pitch the same kid two times in the same week, but it was a lot more of a looser, I would say, pitch count total. Now there's like all these complicated pitch mechanisms, pitch counts, everything else. And it's a challenge in general to try to put it all together.
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing in tournaments. We pretty much threw the same kid every game.
Yeah.
So we had specialists that would come out there and eat up an inning here or there, but it wasn't unusual when you played, you know, five games in a weekend. One kid started three of those games, and you were hoping he went complete game because there just weren't enough arms.
That's the way they still pitch, I think, in Japan, right? Like, those guys throw, like, 300 innings or whatever.
I mean, when you're a kid and you're throwing fastball and changeup, I mean, what's the big deal? As long as you're not getting these 9 and 10-year-olds to throw breaking balls, and I think that's where the concern is, because you're putting extra torque on your elbow and all of that. So I don't envy you sitting there with a lap count or whatever the hell you're using, but hopefully you've been able to outsource this job, because I've seen how you work with numbers, and that doesn't
not
leave
ideal.
Me feeling warm and tingly.
Not ideal. I'm not a numbers guy. I'm the third base coach. And so, honestly, third base coach, important job, because the kids, if they listen, although sometimes they don't respect me, they blow through the signal or they don't listen to the signal or whatever else. It's a little bit like living in my house. By the way, did you see the video I put up? I'm not sure if you did. I meant to mention it earlier. I haven't mentioned it on the show yet. Did you see the video I put up of Laura boxing in the backyard?
No, but I've seen Lara as a verbal sparring partner with you, so I can only imagine from the physical side of things that you're not going to tangle. But we always knew that you didn't hold a torch to your wife when it came to athletic pursuits or anything from a physicality standpoint.
She's a far better athlete than me. Dub, did you see the video? If you haven't, pull it up. Just go to my timeline and look at it. I want to get your verdict on my wife's boxing. Like, she's really good at this point. In fact, Furman, pull out your phone right now. It's a 30-second video. You're on a landline right now, right? You're not on your cell phone.
Let me be honest here. For all the listeners that I'm sure follow you, there's a lot of nonsense that I have to comb through on your timeline to try and find this.
I don't even tweet that much anymore.
Last words. I will say, when I look at Lara here as I break this video down, the one thing she's got to do, Clay, she's got to keep her gloves up, because she's not worried about a little counterpuncher here, but if she's getting in the ring, got to keep those gloves up and focus on the defense as well.
Yeah, but look at her body control there. She's blocking the ribs. So, I mean, she's protecting the body pretty well.
So what's it going to take to get her in a celebrity boxing
She's
match?
Fought.
I mean, there's plenty of women out there that I'm sure despise your content, and your wife would want to defend your honor. Can we go
no, she
out
would
there
not.
And start to set up a fight to try and defend you? Actually, she might take a dive in that fight, honestly, if it made you
she
look
was,
worse.
She is not fighting to defend my honor, let's be honest. She would take the other side of that equation. But she did fight. I bet she's the only former NFL cheerleader that has a professional boxing record or amateur boxing record, however you want to say it. She fought once. She's 1-0. This is probably before we had kids. I mean, she's got three kids now, but before she had kids. And afterwards, I was like, you're not doing that ever again. Because I said, I why would I let somebody like try to ruin your face? Like, you're a good looking woman. Like, there's a very little reward here and a high risk. Like, not to mention, you take a punch and suddenly your brain doesn't work as well. We're not worried with that. So fought once and retired.
So when I was 25 and I was out here, I'd been out here for about 18 months. I was looking to do some different things in terms of workouts. I got sick of the traditional weight training and cardio and all that. Decided I was going to join a boxing gym. I lasted about 6 months there, and it was always funny because you had a lot of these amateur boxers out here that would go in there. And here I was, leaving my job as a financial analyst, coming in a suit, changing into some of my workout clothes, and it was supposed to be light sparring. I mean, I've never had my eggs scrambled as much as I got there. I got into the ring once for what was supposed to be a 3-minute sparring session. They weren't supposed to hit me in the head with a 17-year-old kid, Clay. I'm telling you, that
he
was
worked
the ultimate,
you. Yeah.
Oh, that was the ultimate wake-up call. I mean, my ribs were bruised. He landed a shot or two up top. For those folks that have never gone out there and boxed, I don't care what level, even if you're hitting a heavy bag, you will never feel as exhausted after 3 minutes of hitting a heavy bag and anything else you'll do. Like, swimming and boxing from a physical exertion standpoint surpass anything else out there, even sprinting, heavy lifting, you name it. Those would be the two things that people really need to put
I love it. So we have a boxing coach come to the house every Tuesday and Thursday. So I do basically 9 rounds every Tuesday and Thursday, and my wife does as well. So we each have those workouts, and I think it's absolutely phenomenal. Like, it is a fantastic workout. It's one of my favorite things that I do, and she's gotten really good at it. But it is pretty cool. And I would say, for people out there who are looking for something energetic, you know, maybe you're tired of the usual workouts that you do, hitting that twice a week is a pretty good workout.
And it's a great form of stress relief. So for anybody out there, we're not selling any gear, although maybe now you can get a sponsorship with Everlast or whatever boxing companies are out there. For anybody that hasn't done it, I strongly encourage them to go out there and take a boxing class.
Yeah, no, it's pretty fantastic. We're talking to Todd Furman, by the way. You can follow him at Todd Furman. You can also see him every single day at Fox Bet Live Monday through Friday. And interesting story. We haven't talked a lot about this. Well, before I even get to the NFL draft odds, I want to ask you this question. You saw I'm sure you saw the story about Aaron Donald being alleged to have punched somebody in a Pittsburgh after hours club.
That I have, and I can tell you, having been drinking out there about 3 or 4 in the morning, you definitely don't want to open your mouth anywhere in Southside for those folks that haven't been to Pittsburgh and find themselves drinking in that area.
All right, so let's say this. How much money would you have to be paid for Aaron Donald to get one punch on you, bare-knuckled, not in a boxing glove, in order for you to be willing to take that punch?
Not enough. There's honestly not enough money out there. Having sat, you know, very close to the ring watching Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder, when we had Deontay Wilder on set with us when we were down there in Miami for the Super Bowl, there's honestly not enough money where you could take a punch, because if these guys are trying, and I know Aaron Donald's not a professional boxer, I don't want to put him in that same vein, that your life, there's a good chance it's never going to be the same. So you couldn't pay me enough money to take a shot from any of those guys that are tipping the scale at 250 or 300 that have even a loose idea of boxing technique. I don't need my quality of life to deteriorate that much, even if it's $5 or $10 million.
I'm with you. You know what Dub said he would do it for?
I'm dying to know this.
$5,000.
Oh, no, I changed my answer.
Oh, right. You changed your answer from $5,000 to a golf simulator.
Dub, you could get that from Clay for a good Christmas bonus if he wasn't like Scrooge over there.
You know what? If our fantasy team didn't choke away, I might have one now.
You said it was going to cost $60K, though, right?
When you have a bum GM, I mean, that's what happens. Your fantasy team can't win the big one, so I understand completely.
Did you hear what we did? I don't even know if we talked about that. I told the whole crew that they got whatever money we won in the high-end fantasy league. And then we had a bad beat. I mean, we had a bad beat in the semifinals. We were just cruising, and I thought, man, we put together one of the best possible numbers, and then we lost.
I mean, it happens. That's the cruel twists of fate that are fantasy football. I imagine, Clay, being the generous, kind-hearted soul you are still willing and able to take care of all those close to you to make this radio program go on, and they didn't get cold.
I gave them a pretty decent bonus. I think, right. What did you guys end up with? $1,500 each, I think, was the number?
Yeah, it was more than $1,500.
Should have done in Bitcoin, yeah, Clay. 50, then you would have really looked like you were a man around here.
All right, so, so there you go. I am providing for everyone the best of my ability. All right, speaking of providing for everyone for the best of their ability, this is really kind of spun in a hurry. Mac Jones was minus 300-ish, depending on where you were looking, to be the San Francisco 49ers quarterback. A lot of money came pouring in on him in the last 6 or 7 days, probably, right, Todd? And then all of a sudden, Justin Fields has his second pro day, and boom, Justin Fields is now favored at FanDuel, FanDuel.com/Clay, if you want to bet, to now be the San Francisco 49er pick.
Yeah, and I think it just goes to show how some of these news cycles work as it pertains to the NFL draft. Now, where there's smoke, there's fire, and I can tell you that there was money from professional bettors backing Mac Jones to drive that number up, and I imagine it's more of the same, although I haven't had extensive conversations with a lot of my guys about betting Justin Fields. But the 49ers have been the kings of subterfuge before when it comes to playing coy around the draft. Let's see where these numbers settle. But for anybody that had the foresight to take a shot with Justin Fields at plus $150 or plus $2, you can now kind of create a little arbitrage, bet Mac Jones back the other way, and be in a very good spot going forward. And I have to imagine we're going to see these numbers continue to move from now until when's the draft? Less than 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, 13 days, which should be a lot of fun because I love the draft and I love gambling on the draft. What else to you from a draft perspective, gambling-wise, is standing out? Because I think this is going to become massive as more and more states are adding on. I saw Arizona, New York, among others, Maryland, that are likely to be allowing gambling sooner rather than later. Is there any pick that you like the most from a gambling perspective right now, 13 days out?
One that I'm very curious about, and I won't claim to have any information here, but I know he's grown in some momentum. The defensive back out of South Carolina, J.C. Horn. There's a growing sentiment that he could come off the board before Patrick Surtain. And so when you're looking around for draft props and trying to identify a little bit of opportunity, sure, you can put up $10,000 to make a dollar at FanDuel on Trevor Lawrence or a slightly shorter price on Zach Wilson. But J.C. Horn, to be the first defensive back coming off the board, I definitely think makes some sense. Knowing that, hey, look, if guys have fallen out of favor with Surtain, Horn becomes the biggest beneficiary. So that would be one that I would look at. And I think what's also interesting, we've seen some movement on the offensive line. It was always taken for granted that Penei Sewell was going to be the first O-lineman drafted. There's been a couple of guys out there taking long shot prices on the offensive lineman out of Northwestern in Rashawn Slater. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that. I can just tell you where money has come in and kind of move those markets a bit.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcast.
I was looking at something. We are getting ready for, if you haven't seen it, the 2021 recruiting class rankings in college basketball are close to firming up. And I like to use the 24/7 Sports Composite Index. I tweeted out the rival rankings. I think we wrote about it at OutKick. But I thought this was really intriguing, which teams are at the top of the college basketball recruiting chart right now. Season's almost, the recruiting class are almost complete. And I think it probably is going to surprise people. I like to talk about college football recruiting, but college basketball recruiting is often more impactful on a year-to-year basis because the overall talent of the players can dictate massive swings from one year to the next. So I thought I would hit you with the top 10-ish teams in college basketball as we are sitting right now, mid-April. Almost every top player has officially made his decision about where to go. And I think it's interesting which teams are at the top. So again, this is the 24/7 Sports Composite Index, all right? These are the composite index means they take all of the different rankings and put them into one so there's no argument of a bias involved or whatever else. Best recruiting class in the nation for college basketball next season. The University of Michigan. Juwan Howard is on fire right now with what he has accomplished. You had two alums take over the storied programs of Michigan athletics. Jim Harbaugh in football to much acclaim. Juwan Howard in basketball. And so far, Juwan Howard has been far more successful than Jim Harbaugh has. Michigan with the number one basketball recruiting class in the nation. Number two. How about the University of Tennessee? I think that surprises a lot of people out there. Just got a five-star commitment yesterday, another near five-star commitment the day before. And as a result, the University of Tennessee, Rick Barnes' squad, second best recruiting class in the nation for college basketball. How about number three? I think it's going to surprise some people. Florida State. Leonard Hamilton has things rolling down with FSU right now. The Florida State Seminoles are the number three recruiting class in all of the nation. I think it would surprise a lot of people out there right now to hear Michigan, Tennessee, and FSU as 1, 2, 3 in the overall recruiting class rankings. Then Duke, usual suspect Duke. Then Kansas, no real surprise. The Jayhawks are usually great. Kentucky, not a big surprise there. Gonzaga, who has been on fire with Mark Few in terms of recruiting of late. Michigan State, Baylor. By the way, Scott Drew is going to come on with us, I think, next week. I was texting with him. We are set up to get him on next week at some point. And then the Alabama Crimson Tide. Yes, Nate Oates has got things rolling in a big way with the Alabama Crimson Tide. That is your top 10 college basketball recruiting class rankings. Does that surprise you, Dub, the 10 teams? I thought when I saw it, I was like, I want to make sure that I mention it on the show because there are a lot of teams, I would say, Tennessee, Michigan, Florida State, and Baylor in Alabama. If Baylor hadn't won the national championship, I think people would have been more surprised by that. But I would say a lot of people are going to hear that and be kind of surprised about where the top college basketball classes are right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. When you look at, I mean, Tennessee, obviously, and Michigan being number one is a total shock. I mean, you probably could have given me 10 guesses, and I don't think I would have said Michigan. Tennessee at number two, also surprising. The only one there's two in the top five that are kind of no-brainers in Duke and Kansas. But, I mean, other than that, and even if you look a little farther down, I mean, Nebraska at 14, Colorado at 13, there's some non-traditional names on this list that could be on the up and up for next year and beyond in college basketball.
Yeah, I just think it's really kind of neat to see. I mean, usually in when you look at the college football rankings, the number of teams that kind of sneak into the top 10 are negligible, right? It's basically the same 10 or 15 teams over and over and over again. I think if we had had if we had opened up calls, for instance, and because I don't think most people are paying attention to these rankings right now in mid to late April as we get ready for the most college seasons, most college semesters to be over. I don't think a lot of people are paying attention to this, certainly not the same way that college football, which has a couple of big time traditional signing days, not the same way. And I think a lot of people out there are like, wow, Michigan, Tennessee, FSU. I don't think very many people would have gotten that as the three best basketball recruiting classes in the nation. In fact, unless you're an absolute diehard, I'm not sure that anybody would have been able to guess that right off the top of the list. So I just thought that was pretty intriguing. All right, when we come back, I'm going to give you more of an update on this craziness surrounding Deshaun Watson. I'll also talk about why Rob Manfred's decision to move the All-Star game remains so awful. We are going to be joined by John Morosi. He is our Major League Baseball insider as well. It'll be the final hour of the week, 14 hours up, about to finish the 15th hour. That will be next. I appreciate all of you hanging out with us. I am Clay Travis. This is Outkick. Go give us 5 stars, by the way. Danny G in the Animal Thunderdome was earlier. Early next week, we'll do another 5-star review, so you'll be able to hop in and give us a 5-star review. But in the meantime, go subscribe. Search out my name, Clay Travis. Search out Outkick. This is Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.